Coming out of my name is Mike Duke.
Amen.
It's an honor and a privilege to be here. I'd like to first thank my God for this opportunity one more time to talk about Him. Because if you talk about recovery, you've got to talk about God. I want to thank Marsha and my family here at Mark Houston Recovery Center. I know about Mark Houston, though. It's good to be here. Every time I come here, I get filled. It never fails. Every time I come here, something starts in the pit of my spirit and begins to rise upward, and it consumes me. I don't know if you understand that. Possibly by the time I finish this evening, you might get a better understanding of what I'm talking about and connect with me. I'm here tonight to connect with somebody. I don't know who it is. I don't know who you are. The majority of people in this room I do not know. But I look for connection and confirmation. We connected. When you asked me that back there in the room, I just looked at your wrist. Nothing happens by coincidence. My sobriety date is March 9, 1987. Aaron has not physically had his way with me since then. Mentally and spiritually, it attacks me. But as a result of what's offered in the anonymous rooms, not just Cocaine Anonymous, which is primarily my fellowship, but in all of the anonymous rooms, hopefully the root and the solution to what we suffer from has become the mainstay in my life. It's allowed me not to do what I do. I'm not asleep after 27 years. I'm wide awake to the fact of I'm shooting dope again. If I don't keep my connection and my relationship and my love affair alive with God, I'm going to do what I do. I am not exempt. So that's why when I'm asked to come or somebody asks me to sponsor them and take them through the work, I don't care how many sponsees I have, I don't turn people down. Usually what happens is that they turn themselves down because they're not truly committed. This is for desperate, dying, hopeless people. Not for the man or the woman that has another option or another reservation. This is not for you. This is for the gentleman or the young lady that has gotten to the end of the road and they know they're at the end of the road. Very clear to me, and it still took 5 years, 6 years, walking down Morningside Park. I'm from a little country in New York called Harlem. And walking down one of the park sides that I grew up around, and Spirit said, "You dying, man." Spirit said, "You on your way out, just as sure your name is Michael Eugene Dalton. You are a dead man if you don't do something." And that's when I made the decision to leave New York and come to Los Angeles. And I followed that decision up with a period of detox. And I don't know you guys and girls that are in here, if you like me, I always thought the substance was the problem. And one substance, not all mind altering things, one substance. If I could just stop using heroin, I'd be okay. And that had been a lie for me since the age of 17. So I was able to separate myself from heroin, but I did not separate myself from alcohol and from marijuana and from cocaine. And needless to say, it was only a couple of years before I started to use again. And I ran out here. In L.A., I ran for about another 5 years, and not as hard as I ran in New York, but I ran. And I went into my last treatment program as a result of catching another possession case. And my life has not been the same since. So I'm here tonight to talk to somebody, let you know that I didn't celebrate this 27 years for me. This 27 years is for you. This 27 years is for somebody that's in here that, and you see, it's not only for the alcoholic and the addict, it's for the so-called normie person, too, that thinks their life is all together. And on the inside, they're twisted and mangled and tore up. It's for that person to let them know that there's a way out, and they, too, can have their life recreated. So when I speak, I don't know really what I'm going to talk about. I know I sit with God for a minute. I keep my textbook with me. And I just ask Him to speak what He needs to say, what He would have me to say, to speak to somebody. What's been on my mind lately since I saw you guys last, I've become a licensed minister. And I hate to say religion because we're not really religious. We're more spiritual than religious. We're non-denominational. We invite any race, any color, any creed. And the basis of our deal is spirituality and deepening our personal relationship with the Spirit of God, which is a living spirit, which can be felt, touched, seen, and talked to. So I never know what spirit is going to do with me, but I do know there's a piece in the book that I was led to. And when I got to Austin the other day, I woke up the other morning and I had a dream the night before, and I knew I had some unfinished business here. Because when I left Austin to go back to L.A., I left unfinished business, and I had to clean it up. On 64, in the big book, and I need to read all of this just to get to really what I want to talk about. It says, therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsalable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about value. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup, which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestation. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. I was relaxing this afternoon and watching a movie on TV called The Dreamer. And it was about a little girl. And and our horse. And the horse, in the beginning of the movie, was a beautiful, vibrant, alive creature. Like a lot of you were. You weren't born to be who you turned out to be. And what happened as a result of getting in a race, when life shows up, we begin to take on worldly, lifely things. And one of those things is competition. So we move, we jockey for position. We jockey. There's a part in the 12 of 12 that talks about having good relationships with people. And we can never pull that off because we're either trying to get to the top of the pile or we're either trying to bury ourselves under the pile. And this horse was in a race and fell in the trap and broke its leg. And they wanted to put the horse down. And the little girl was adamant about, don't kill the horse. And what she did was she began to show unconditional love to this animal that everybody else had turned their back on. And as a result of her plea and her desire to save this individual, this horse, the horse healed. As a result of the unconditional love that was given to it, and actually went on to win one of the major races in the country. And something that's been on my mind lately has been forgiveness and love. The crux of what we really deal with. The crux of really living a life where inside I can get some peace and contentment as to living out here, but actually I'm living from in here out here. And it's no more than what we talk about in the rooms of recovery, but in so many other edifices, temples, mosques, wherever, they talk the same language. They talk forgiveness. There's a season that's coming up now, and it's the Easter season. And it's about this dude, man. They hung this dude on the cross, man, and he had two dudes on the side of him. Now, these two dudes were real criminals. The dude in the middle, he hadn't really done anything wrong. He was just being who he was. But he had all the right to turn his back on this other guy that was on his right when the guy said, can I hang out with you, man, when you go home? And he had every reason in the world not to allow him to do that. And he said, you know, yes. Can go to my home with me. So I wonder how many of us really have gotten into really what this deal is about. One piece of it for me has been self-forgiveness. That in order for me to heal, I have to forgive myself for all the messes that I put myself in. I work with a lot of people, and they get to ninth step, and they're making their amends list, and I ask them, are you on the list? And they say, no. And I say, why not? I say, why aren't you going to make amends to yourself? I said, you're willing to make amends to everybody else, but have you forgiven you for all the stuff that you've done? And 9 times out of 10, they don't even think about that. We do us better than anybody else. We hold us to the line better than anybody else, and then when we don't measure up, we the hardest on ourselves than anybody else. Some other ingredients that's involved in the recovery process that's not really talked about enough in the rooms. They talk about the book, and they can quote the book, and they can tell you about the process, and they can tell you how to work each step, but what about the stuff that's between the lines? The stuff that you learn as a result of staying here for a while and experiencing life. Stuff like letting an individual be who they are, no matter what they're doing, and you love them anyway. You don't judge them. You don't find fault with them. You realize, I was talking with my guy. Thanks for hanging out with him. We was talking on the way in, and we were talking about the dark side. And he said something, and I said, well, Mike, everybody's got a dark side. I don't care who you are, man, you got some stuff on that other side that's your nemesis. On some level. But as a result of what we do in the nucleus of this recovery process, I like to call it the club in the club. Because everybody ain't here for the same reason. Everybody ain't here because they're a real one. Everybody ain't here because they get a mental thought that outweighs any other thought. Somebody that's here, this will be your last treatment program. I was so happy and proud. And proud because I was instrumental in helping somebody. I'm not a guy that, I don't help you. I don't help you. I look for what I can get from you. And to come back here and see the majority of the staff are young men that were here when I was working here. It filled me to a point, but it also confirmed some stuff in me. See, we recovering people, we need to see. We need to see God's handiwork. We need to see His blessings. We need to see that He's doing exactly what we asked Him to do. And that's why a lot of us, you don't stick around, man, because you don't hang out long enough for Him to pass the blessing and create the miracle and for you to get the eyesight to see exactly what He's done. I love that page, what I just read, it says, when we clear up spiritually, I clear up physically and mentally. When I begin to cultivate a personal relationship with God, something happens to all that other stuff. Your life just ain't the same no more. The obsession to drink or to use is removed, and that's but a small piece of what we suffer from. What I really suffer from is this knucklehead up here. That's what I really suffer from. What I really suffer from is the deal of wanting to be God and wanting to run my life. Now, I don't know if you like me or not. I look around the room, and ain't nobody in here like me. So, we just don't skip that part. And we'll take it to another level. I grew up in a little, I call Harlem a country because in the late 60s, and early 70s, when I really began to grow up, that's when I had cut my family loose, and I had made a conscious decision to go to the street. It was all black. I grew up totally black. It amazes me to be standing here tonight. It amazes me. I don't know about you, but it amazes me. It should amaze you too. But it amazes me to be standing here tonight because when I reflect back on where I come from an era that was totally racist. I grew up totally black. What was instilled in me was very simply, stay away from you guys. Don't mess with you guys. You don't mean us no good. And that was instilled in me through Panthers and Muslims and just neighborhood. little did I know that was fear. Little did I know that was indoctrination that created fear that did not allow me to grow into a world that's multifaceted. I grew up with some morals and some values. Now here you can identify, some of y'all, with dishonesty being the best policy. Like, don't love your neighbor as yourself. Beware of your neighbor. Trust no man. Tell your business to nobody. Keep your friends close, but keep your enemies closer. Stuff like that, that for years I lived my life like that, man. And basically how I lived it alone. I was terribly alone. The youngest of five brothers, 9 years between my brother, me and my brother. My brother next to me, Edward, it was 9 years between us, but the four of them were like 2 years, a year and a half apart. My father had left when my brother Edward was gone. I was like an accident. They used to tell me stuff like, you was born and we found you on the doorstep in a basket and stuff like that, because it was so many years between us. And raised by three women, my brothers were older and up and out of the house, so they weren't really around that much. I was totally, totally alone. And I think about that upbringing and that lack of love that I thought I didn't have. What I found out as a result of doing some work was that those three women that raised me truly loved me with all their heart. They did it the best they could in the way that they know how. They knew how to do it, but I didn't understand it. And I grew up warped and tormented by me. And what I allow people to impose on me, give to me as a way to live my life. And I stayed trapped for a very long time. Very long time. Drugs and alcohol became a mainstay in my life around the age of about 11. I started drinking wine about 11. I had a guy's meeting in L.A. that I'm secretary of, and I had a guy come out to speak, and he said something. I'm still a thief. When I go to meetings and I hear speakers and I like stuff they say, I steal it. And I use it. And something that Dale said, he said, I forget where he said he grew up at, but he said, AA never came to my part of town. And when he said that, I reflected back, and in my growing up, I didn't know no recovering nobody. I didn't know nobody that got out, man. Where I come from, you drink and you use and you die. A brother that died from an overdose of heroin, an uncle that died from untreated alcoholism, drunk as a skunk in a fight in the middle of the street, got hit in the head, fell down, cracked his head open on the sidewalk, died. No recovery, you don't recover in that lifestyle, being in that. And I began to reflect on that when Dale said that, and I said, you're absolutely right. What a blessing that along this path, a recovery path was given to me. And it really started at the age of 19. When I went in my first treatment program, which was Synanon, granddaddy treatment program, came to L.A. for the first time. Because there was an awakening back here that something's wrong. I was asking, I came up yesterday and I did the group, and I asked one of them, I said, what's wrong with you? And they gave me all the book stuff. Allergy, obsession, spiritual malady, can't stay stopped. And I said, it's real simple. What's wrong with you? And it's so simple that we miss it. Recovery is so simple that we miss it, man. And finally, after we went around and everybody threw their couple things in there, I said, no. What's wrong with you is that something is wrong with you. If you sit in a benchmark recovery center and you're sitting in a circle listening to a guy you ain't never seen before, and this is not just your first treatment program, this is your umpteenth treatment program. I said to someone, how many treatment programs have you been in? 6, 7, 10. I said, something's wrong, man. I said, something's wrong. I said, my God, it ain't quit yet. And that's the insanity of my disease. That's how powerful the disease is, man. It's so powerful that you do this dance over and over and over and over, and the simplicity of what's happening with you, you won't catch. It'll go right over your head. And I gave them the key. I gave them the key that's an art to recovery. And the art to recovery is listening. Listening is an art. I mean, to truly listen. You know how you talk to people and before you can finish what they're saying, you saying something? That means you ain't heard nothing they say. I got sponsees that I talk to them and they start, and I tell them, just shut up. Just shut up. And listen for a minute. Just for a minute. Because the deal with what's wrong with me is that I think I know something. And we got umpteenthers that they keep coming back because they think they know something. They know better than we do. That might have been true at one time. Ain't true now. When you get some time, and if anybody tells you, they got a saying in the rooms that time don't mean nothing. I don't know if you ever heard it, but stick around long enough, you'll hear it. Some knucklehead will come up to you and say, time don't mean nothing. Time means something. I'm talking for a real alcoholic. Real, a real one. Not a poop butt one. A real one. I'm talking about one that drinks no matter what. One that cannot buy into the slogans that they throw around so freely in the rooms, like easy does it. Dope fiends and alcoholics don't do nothing easy. We make our lives hard, man. We do it to ourselves. And it's so simple that we miss it. We don't see that we are the key to our own freedom. We don't see that we have the key that will unlock the door to a new life. We don't see that it's in my hands. And we get lost in the shuffle. So that you being like me, You got stuff that's here. The crux of my problem is my thinking. Still today, people say, so why are you still here 27 years later? And it's real simple. Real simple, Marsha. Because something's wrong with me. Something's wrong with me. 27 years later, something's still wrong with me. I still need you guys in unity. I still need a recovery process. I still need to be of service in the fellowships. I still need to turn my life and my will over to the care of a loving God and deepen that and get to know Him just a little bit better. And take some of the conditions off of Him that I put on him. Got a sponsor now, and it was hard, Charlie, with Mark Dyer. Mark Houston was my sponsor. Joe Hawk was my sponsor. They were buddies. Don P. was their sponsor. Lineage. Particular kind of people. Powerful people. Spiritual, spirit-driven teachers. And it was hard to find a sponsor, man. I got real spoiled in recovery. Real spoiled. You couldn't just come at me with anything. I wasn't buying anything. I was taught that. I remember when I first got clean, and I did a piece of work, and my first sponsor had gotten the message from Joe, and Alton had passed it to me, and Alton and I severed relationships, and I'm just going to say this, be careful with religion in the room. Be careful with religion. It tears our fellowship apart, man. Tears it apart. They got a deal happening in England now with the religious ones trying to tear up CA over there, man. So I had to split from Alton, and I got with Joe, and Joe helped me finish my first piece of work. Then he took me through another piece of work, and that's why, and that's when I came out of that first step addict. I am a purebred addict. I am not alcoholic. I'm a purebred addict. I am not alcoholic. I don't believe everybody's alcoholic addict. I don't believe. There's a process and there's a way to move through the first step where you can find out what it is that you truly love. Because a dollar to a donut, you love one thing more than you do the other. And Joe took me through a piece of work. And he took me through some spiritual exercise, and I saw there were things that I did for heroin that I never did for alcohol. I saw that I never craved alcohol the way I craved heroin. I saw that if I sat down with you, Marlene, and we were drinking, I'm only taking a couple of drinks, and I don't want no more. I'm going to find me a cop man. The book says we drink and we use for the effect. What gives you the effect? It was very important. He explained to me it was very important because out of that would come the fellowship that I craved. The same way in the street, if you was a crack addict, you didn't hang out with winos, right? You probably hung out with crack addicts, right? Right. I was a heroin addict. I never hung out with crack addicts. Same thing happens in recovery. For me, this is my deal. You all said that in the beginning, right? I'll probably say some stuff that is my stuff, right? Right. It was so powerful for me because it made perfect sense. It made perfect sense. I never sat in jail for alcohol. Now, you have people in the rooms that sat in jail with DUIs and all kind of stuff for alcohol. Been in padded cells and took Anabuse and all kind of stuff for alcohol. The treatment programs I never went in for alcohol. It was always heroin. He said, well, Mike, I used to hide behind dumpsters to drink alcohol. I said, I used to hide behind dumpsters to shoot dope. I'd walk down the street and have my alcohol in a paper bag. He said, if I put you in front of a door and on one table it's alcohol and on the other table it's heroin, which one would you pick? Wasn't in an instance I said the table was heroin. He helped me get to my truth. I'm a firm believer in alcohol addict. The sad part of that, though, is I had to stop hanging out with him. Because when I qualified after step one as an addict, he said, you got to go. There's a little meeting in Santa Monica that we would do every Tuesday night. Alcoholics Anonymous is about singleness of purpose. It's about alcoholics. We got a lot of addicts hanging out at Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of them. They hiding out in AA. Ain't no more alcoholic than the man in the moon. But they comfortable there for now. Because sooner or later, the restless, irritable, discontent stuff is going to surface. See, when I used to hang out in AA, when a real alcoholic shared, I couldn't identify. I need to be able to identify with like-minded people. I need to be able to identify with somebody that I know, you went through what I went through, man. Anytime you went hustling, you went hustling for some dope. You didn't hustle. You didn't hustle for alcohol. And you got alcoholics that hustle for alcohol. When I found my truth, he said, you got to go. I said, what you talking about, Joe? He said, you got to get out of here. He said, this is AA. You are not alcoholic. He said the other thing. He said, go find a home. But here's the other thing, Mike. Always stand on your truth. Don't ever compromise yourself again. See, if you're anything like me, I compromise myself just so I can hang out with you. Just so I can be a part of your little clique. I'd do what you wanted me to do. I'd say what you wanted me to say. I'd act the way you wanted me to act. I'd dress the way you wanted me to dress. So just so I could be a part of it and not feel left out. Spiritual teacher. From that point on, and I would say that would be about 2 years clean, I found Cocaine Anonymous. That's been my fellowship ever since. Naturally, being the dope fiend that I am, I try to be hip, slick, and cool. So I try to hang out in AA every now and then, y'all. Until I went to Vegas, and I lived in Vegas. And I used to go to this 10 and up meeting. And it was an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And I used to identify as powerless over alcohol. I wouldn't say I was alcoholic. And one Friday night, this lady got up to the podium and said, all you so-and-sos that coming in don't want to identify as an alcoholic, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. It's singleness of purpose. And I left like this. And I called my sponsor and I talked to my sponsor about it a little bit. And I think I was working with Bob Darrow at that time. I did a piece of work with Bob Darrow. I had to go back to that meeting, bigger than this, twice as big as this on a Friday night, get up to the podium, and I had to make amends to that meeting. And didn't go back. Since then, I'm strictly a Cocaine Anonymous guy. Why Cocaine Anonymous? Because it's cocaine and all mind-altering substances. Matter of fact, I've had a vision now for a while. What I'd like to do is start a program for heroin addicts only. I don't know if I can do it. I don't know what the regs and government lawyers and pop and all that, but that's a vision that's come to me, to start a program for heroin addicts only. Heroin addicts are my people. So as a result of that deal with Joe, I got free from some stuff. I got free from that stuff, some stuff. One thing that became very apparent to me was that I didn't have to shoot dope no more. I didn't ever have to get loaded again. One thing that I'm a stickler about and I'm firm on is that if you get loaded again and if you drink again, it's because you want to. It's that simple. Ain't no outside circumstances. Ain't no family. Ain't no job. Ain't no love affair. Ain't no... You just want to. In the streets, when you were going through your deal, you rode through anything. Horse and baggage, you roll through it. But when we get here, any least little thing gets us to a point where we gotta, no, I do it because I want to. When I get to see how powerful drugs and alcohol is in my life, I get a moment of clarity. Then when I get that moment of clarity, the big boom comes in. They tell me allergy and obsession, and they devote four chapters to it in the big book, but then they drop the bomb on me on 52. Middle paragraph says, the bedevilment. Basically, what they tell me is, you don't know how to live. You don't have the necessary power to do what's needed to be done in your life in order for you to just breathe. No matter what comes down the pipe, you can't breathe. It upsets your spirit. It separates you from the Spirit of God that has dwelled deep down within you all your life. So I come to part of my belief system. Part of my belief system is that I was born spiritual. That I was, when I was in my mother's womb, I was spirit. I was pure. I was not tainted. I was not twisted. I was not governed by anything. Nothing ruled me. Nothing said, do this, do that. I was a pure creature created by God. I was part of God's eternal family. And when I came out here and saw you guys and all the stuff that man creates, all the ideas and ideologies and philosophies and morals and all the stuff, I began to want to fit in. So I became twisted. I became altered, and an altered ego was created, and I finally nailed him. I finally nailed him in a piece of work I finished maybe about a year ago. Me and Carter put a name on it. I finally found a sponsor, y'all. We put a name on it. His name is Mr. on 12th Street. I grew up on 112th Street between 8th and 7th Avenues in Harlem, New York. Growing up in that little village, man, I created this guy to live in that village, to live in that concrete and pavement. Because if I didn't learn how to live, they would have crushed me. And he's not a very nice guy. He's not a very nice guy. He will do anything to get what he thinks he needs in order to live. And it started at a very young age. And he almost killed me. He wasn't spiritual life. He separated himself from spiritual life. So you wake up to the fact of there's two of you. And there's warfare going on. There's an internal war going on. You know, like you get ready to do something and something says, and people say that, something told me. Well, I know what that something is now. But it's two of them talking. It's two of them talking. It's Mr. on 12th Street that wants me to deal with stuff the way I used to, that used to work, that on some level still might work. But it don't serve me no good no more. What comes out of it is not of good. And then there's that part of me that's been reborn and recreated that we talk about in the big book. That's of God and is of good and is of doing the next right thing. It is ultimately about helping people. And what's happened is that I finally got in a place in my life, in my physical body, where I could hear both of them and do the next right thing. And I can say to Mr. on 12th Street, you know, I hear you talking, man, but, like, we can't do this. You can't hang out no more, buddy. You know, I love you, and you see the deal, that altered part of me helped me to get to this moment on some levels. And some of that stuff that was brought to the table with him, I needed in order to live back then. But I don't need it no more. But he ain't going away just like that, man. He's not going to give up the battle to be chief number one just like that. He's going to fight for his right to live. So he fights. And what happens is that initially, what happens is that he wins sometimes. And I get beat down. And I get remorseful. And I get depressed. Depression is something that is not talked about in recovery enough. My belief is that depression is a spiritual sickness. And that you might need medication to help you, but medication combinated with a combination of medication and God, eventually you can get to a place, possibly, where you won't need that medication again. And you can outgrow depression. I've seen it. Well, I've seen it. I've done it. Because I've been depressed in the COVID. I've been on taxes. I've been on Prozac. I'm an advocate of spirit. So I took it for a while. Very depressed. Her leaving me made me very depressed, Charlie. I was like twisted. Because you ain't supposed to leave me. You know, I'm the best thing that ever happened to you. Don't you know what you got? And it like crushed me. So Doc said, hey, we're gonna give you something to help you. And at that time I was newly into spirit world stuff. Bill talks about it and Tim still talks about entering the world of the spirit. I was newly into it. So after I took it for a while, spirit showed up and said, okay, it's time to cut it loose. I said, what? He said, stop taking it. Tell them to wean you off and let it go. You got yourself in this mess. Now let's get out of it. So I've had my experiences with depression in recovery, but it hasn't been a thing that's been tied to me. You can't be free. 52 shows up and shows me that I don't know how to live. Spiritual. Inner stuff. Can't control my emotional nature. Driving down the street, I just start crying for nothing. Clear sunny day, and I look at the sun, and I just start crying. Dog is sick, don't know if he's going to get better or not, just start crying. I'm looking at that movie this afternoon, and tearjerker, man. And I'm looking at the movie, and it's like, Mike, please, man. Like, please, man, the horseman. Can't control your emotional nature. I'm there. What keeps you here, Mike? Stuff like that. But the flip side of that is that I feel that. I was cast iron at one time. You couldn't get in here. You couldn't even get this close. I wouldn't even let you this close. Prey to misery and depression. That means I'm being hunted. Misery and depression hunts me down. It's got a job. It comes looking for me. It wants me. It wants to take me hostage. And I ain't got nothing to be miserable for. I don't want for nothing. God's blessings are abundant in my life. People love me unconditionally. I come to Austin, man, and it's interesting. I'm just going to say it. You guys love me better than my family. You guys take care of me better than my family, man. Except for my daughter and my three grands. They just love Pawpaw. They love Pawpaw. Imagine that. Three grands, they never seen me hop. They don't know about Mr. on 12th Street. And I purposely keep him out of the picture. Now, he could show up because the way I was raised, when you didn't act right, you got a whipping. I got whipped when I was a kid. I didn't get spanked. I got whipped. How about some love and some embracing and some talking to and some understanding and some, well, what's really going on? Why are you doing that? Full of fear, unhappy. Full of fear about what? I'm sitting out there and I don't really, I'm really not afraid when I speak. I've been doing this for a while, but I'm sitting out there and a tinge of fear comes over me. And I said, so what's that about, man? And to be quite honest, Spirit said, look at the crowd. And I said, that ain't got nothing to do with it. I'm here to do a service. I'm here to carry a message. I can't let nothing stop me. Can't make a living. Meaning things I like to do, I don't do no more. Just about everything I like to do, I do. Only one thing I like to do that I don't do as often as I like to do. That's get in one of them big jumbo jets and just go. If I had the money, I'd travel every day of the year. I'd be so. But now I do it more than I ever have in my life. The miracle, what's happened as a result of being recreated by a power and a spirit that I truly tapped into. I'm a guy that was stuck on a corner. I'm a guy that was captured in captivity in a radius of 4 blocks. I was a guy that was dominated by racism. I was a guy that said, I ain't never getting married. All 4 of my brothers, I watched their marriages. And I said, man, I'm not marrying a soul. I'm not doing it. Because of what I saw. And I've been married. I'm not married now, but I've been married. So many changes, so many differences, so many blessings as a result of what's happened in my spirit. So I get you forgiveness. I get you forgiveness. And forgiveness is about allowing you to be who you are. Forgiveness is about no matter what you're doing or what you're saying, let me just listen. And then after you finish, I ask you, how can I help you? What can I do for you? How can I be of service to you? Then loving. Loving another individual. How you do that, Mike? You love by not being judgmental. You let people go through their stuff, and while they're going through their stuff, you let them know, I support you in whatever it is you need from me. How can I help? As a result of a spiritual awakening, I carry this message. What's the message? The message is love. The message is unselfish concern for others. The message is, I no longer exist, man. There is no Mike D. There's a spirit of Mike D. That's alive in the universe with one purpose, to help you. That's it. And when I adopt that as a way of life, something happens. In the moments that I think they're not okay, I can look through them and see that they're perfectly okay. In the moments when Mr. on 12th Street shows up and he wants to tear his booty, I can pat him on the head, put my arm around him, and say, man, it's going to be all right, man. I love you. Thank you for helping me to get here. I sit in meetings, man, and I hear people say they don't like heroin. I don't like crack cocaine. I love heroin, man. I love heroin. I'm so grateful. faithful that Haran did for me what I could not do for myself. Haran has me standing. And as a result of that experience with Haran, it's taken me all over the world, and it's allowed me to touch so many people. It's unbelievable. So if you're looking for a life that's unbelievable, and you're looking for a change that you believe is impossible, you're in the land of delusion. You're in a land of delusion, and you're landed in a land of delusion because that's where you want to live. You don't really want to stop doing what you're doing. You ain't finished. These youngsters that we got in here, man, just imagine if you got your life together now. Sometimes I reminisce back on 19 years of age, when I went into Synanon, and I said, my God, you've been to Paris 6 times, you've been to Africa 2x, you've been to Spain, on and on and on, and this is in my 50s and 60s. Just imagine if you had got your life on the line. And then I snap out of the fantasy world, and I come back to reality. But that's something I'm passing on to you guys. You don't have to suffer no more, man. You ladies that are up there on the hill, you don't have to be in pain no more. You don't have to sell your soul no more. You can join the club in the club. That's those of us that are here for real. We ain't shaking and faking. We here for real. We know this is a way of life that's better than any life we have ever lived, and probably better than any life we will live. We know it. There's a knowingness about what we do. You can join us on that broad highway. I want to thank Marsha and I'm going to say it again. Mark Houston Recovery Center. Most of all, I want to thank Mark. I want to thank him for what he did for me. When I came to Texas, he called me, and he was my sponsor, and I had been talking to him. I was living in Vegas, and he said, your marriage is over. I said, what are you talking about? He said, look, dude, your marriage is finished. Your marriage is finished. Employment for you. You've been in that career for God knows how long. It's time for you to do something different. Let's talk. I'm going to bring you down to Texas. I got something here you might be interested in. Come down, let's talk. And he embraced me, and he loved me. He knew everything about me. He never held it against me. He never judged me. He never found fault with me. If he did anything, he laughed at me. And then he laughed with me. Why? Because he was human the same way I was. And I'll never forget what he told me, and it opened up my life. I was, John talked about cooking. I'm an executive chef, so one Thanksgiving I cooked for the entire facility. And I was running up and down, I was running between the kitchen over here and the mansion up there, and he was standing on the porch, and he was standing there the way he stands and just grinning, and he said, you having fun, huh? I said, yeah. I said, there's 2 things I know something about. I know how to cook, and I know how to shoot dope. That's 2 things I know how to do. Those 2 things, and never forget. He looked at me and he said, Mike, I beg to differ with you, man. He said, you know something else. He said, you know something about recovery. And I've never forgotten that. I want to thank the Spirit of Mark Houston and this place that every time I come to Maynard, Texas, where when I was a kid and I fashioned this to Hunt 12th Street. They told me, don't take your to Texas. Out of Texas. And I was able to move past that and come down because what I thought was here was not here at all. I got a beautiful, loving family here, man. I want to thank you guys. I love you guys. God bless you.